This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. Welcome to a new week. Welcome to really kind of a new season here at One Bills Drive. It is the first day of the off-season conditioning program, and we are live on the air from Orchard Park. If you're watching on the MSG feed, you see the shot of the stadium.
Doesn't look like a new season, Murph.
It doesn't. It looks like February. It's a little bit of light snow here in Orchard Park today, but we're not going to Steve. I said to Steve, look at that, and he said we're not talking about it. So we're not going to talk about it. It's just a little snow. No one will get hurt. Steve, I was in New York over the weekend. It was 75 and sunny Saturday and Sunday. Right. It was ridiculously nice.
I'm totally with you. I played golf on Saturday. It was gorgeous. It was a lot of you know, it was a great day and went outside. Yeah, I knew it's going to be kind of a cruddy week this week. It's going to be that mid to high 50s. It does get up to 60 in the high 60s Wednesday or so.
You just got done telling me 5 minutes ago you didn't want to talk about the weather.
Sorry. It's getting better, though. It's getting better.
You're doing the extended. Do the five-day forecast.
I don't dwell on the negative. I try to dwell on the positive. So, you know, that's where I'm at.
Here's positive.
Looking forward.
This is why it's kind of a start of a new season. First day of the voluntary off-season conditioning program was today. What do we count about 40 or 50 players out there? We saw the offense, I think.
Yeah, there was like 40 offensive players, and there's got to be maybe that many defensive players. So there's got to be 70. They might get 90-95% participation.
Yeah.
Of course, they're not, I don't know what they're doing. We were watching on MSG, they're throwing the medicine balls around. This is all conditioning. Josh is out there throwing this thing around. And
this is the first phase of the voluntary off-season conditioning program. It's conditioning. It's strength workouts. No positional work allowed, so you won't see running backs line up or receivers lining up. Players who need rehab work can get treatment. This goes for the first 2 weeks, and then in week three, they get to phase two. So phase one of the Bills' voluntary off-season conditioning program. I believe Tyler Croft is on screen right there. Phase one of the voluntary off-season conditioning program began today, and it will wrap up in the next couple of minutes or so. Coming up at 1 o'clock, we will hear from some of the principals involved. We've got podium sound coming from players after the workouts, including Jermaine Edmonds and Josh Allen and a couple of others, get their view on the start of the off-season conditioning program. I mentioned to you today, and I was just reminded watching the video that we have on MSG, this is really – the start of the big season for the strength and conditioning staff, Eric Ciano and his staff, right? This is when they go to work with these players who come in after, 2.5-3 months? I'm not going to say of inactivity, but at least not of structured workouts. And they go to work now on this.
It's funny, too, because Eric Ciano, this is the perfect time of year we want to talk to him. You know, we want to get him on the show. He's, like, busy. Yeah, you know, he's one of those guys that, I ain't got time to do that. He doesn't want to come on this. We're trying to get him on because I think it'll be infinitely interesting, particularly with the new facility that they're in and all the stuff that they're doing with these players. I just want to get a list of all the modalities that they've got available to these guys to keep them on the field. They had a really good season last year. The medical and training staff and the strength conditioning staff had a phenomenal year last night in support of this team. Now, the team only went 6-10, but they lost fewer man games to injury than anybody in the National Football League. And with the upgrade in their facilities that they just opened up on Friday, they should, you know, feel like they've got a real head start on having another good year like that. Now, there's no getting around. You're not going to have nobody get hurt during the season. It's 100% chance of anybody of you getting hurt during regular season. It was that way when I played, and it's still that way. But to get these guys on the back on the practice field and on the game field, of course, feeling much, much better than they otherwise would have because of all this new equipment, the new technologies that they're implementing, it's a big step forward for the team, and I think it's going to help. And you know, over the course of a long season, it will be a big benefit to these guys. So I'd love to get him on if we can. We'll keep pestering him, though.
That's what we do. We're going to hear from some of these players coming up at 1 o'clock or so when they hit the podium over in the media room. We will share those interviews with you on the show here today. Before that, 12:30 today, Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, will join us right here in studio in about 26 minutes to discuss what he sees today. We'll get his thoughts on the new Player Performance Center, the new weight room, which is open now and in business today, and a couple of other issues with Chris Brown coming up at 12:30. 1 o'clock, we'll hear from the podium. 2 o'clock, we're going to focus on the draft. We're now a week and a half away from round one, day one of the NFL draft, which is Thursday, April 25th. We'll talk with Dan Shaka, the editor and publisher of Our Lads Draft, Our Lads 2019 Guide to the NFL Draft. I'm a subscriber, have been for some 30 years. Just got my Our Lads Draft Guide in the mail over the weekend. Our Lads, you want it badly, don't you? But you're not going to get it.
No, I don't.
Seriously, this is the Bible.
You know what I've got? I've got the website.
I know. This is easier. This is easier to maneuver through.
It probably is.
Look,
probably.
And here's the best thing about it. I mentioned this to Dan Shaka last time I had him. Not a picture in the magazine.
It's all info. It's almost
great
like
stuff.
Data
yeah.
when you open it up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty analytical stuff. So it's kind of fun to do. But, so we got – he's coming on with us
today.
2 o'clock. That'll be fun. Talking more about it. There's all kinds – now, and it's, as you know, anybody who listens to the radio and listens to us, we're all NFL all the time mostly. And it's mock draft season. I mean, everybody's – and now you're getting mock draft 2.0, mock draft 3.0, you know. And I saw a mock draft today that had the Bills trading out of number 9 down to 15 with the Washington Redskins, and the Bills still get DK Metcalf doing that plus some picks. So there's all of that conjecture going on. There's still questions about whether the Cardinals will actually take Kyler Murray with the first pick of the draft. Maybe it's all smokescreen where they think, yeah, he's the guy. He's the guy that can really get it done, and it's all a smokescreen. Because they're going to actually keep Josh Rosen and trade that top pick, hoping they can get great value and build their roster. Because, you know, they were a poor football team last year with a poor roster, and the only way to get a better roster is to pick a lot better players, and a lot of them, they need more picks to do that. So maybe the Arizona Cardinals will trade more picks to get more picks for the first pick of the draft this year. And that has obviously a ripple effect throughout the first round and beyond. So there's a lot of conjecture going on at this time of year, and that's where we're at, and we're neck deep in it.
In the Our Lads Guide, Dan Shaka, we'll talk to him about this today too. He's got Arizona going with Nick Bosa with the first overall pick, the Ohio State defensive end. We'll talk to him about that. He's got Kyler Murray going 11th as the second quarterback chosen, which is different than what's been the narrative since he ended the combine. But all of that coming up with Dan Shaka coming up at 2 o'clock was today, Our Lads Guide to the NFL Draft. So the draft is in the mix.
Brownie's coming in a couple minutes.
Brownie's coming in at 12:30. Right. We've got a lot to talk about, including the weekend, which most sports fans, most Americans, I think, were consumed by the coverage of the Masters on CBS over the weekend. I was in New York and then coming home, and I thought, I missed it. I was aware of what happened. I actually watched a little bit of a replay, the late afternoon replay in the LaGuardia Airport. But I got home, I turned on the TV at 8:30 when I got home last night, and there was the Masters, the entire final round on CBS Sports. I stayed up 1:30 in the morning. I was up watching the Masters. It was good.
It was worth it.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to poke holes at it. It's obviously one of the most memorable Masters in recent years. It wasn't overly dramatic in terms of the play, Steve. I mean, there was the moment on 12 when, four of the six golfers plunked it in the water, kind of the turning point. But, you know, there was no great charge down 16, 17, 18. Tiger was methodical. He was efficient and did fantastic. He was great. Others crumbled a little bit. I was impressed by a lot of things from Tiger Woods, including his demeanor, Steve. He never got too excited, too up, too down, too high or low about how his round was going, right? And just chewing his gum, confidently chewing his gum and making shots, nothing spectacular, and he came out a winner. It is a memorable win. We'll talk about that in a moment, but I didn't – listen, I'm talking to people on my way to the airport yesterday. They're like, oh, it's the greatest. I've never seen anything like it. And I was really – I was a little bit let down watching it last night. I said, well, there's no great drama here in terms of sports
there was
drama.
There was some great moments in the tournament, but at the end of the tournament, it was just two holes to go. It was over.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying.
And I get it. And I can go on and on about the Masters Golf Tournament. I've been there a handful of times and watched a lot of different rounds. And I've been to a multitude of top level sporting events in a multitude of sports, you know, from the NBA to the NHL to, of course, the NFL, the golf, the PGA, both with the Ryder Cup and the PGA and the Masters. I've been to major events. I've been to the Boston Marathon. I've been to World Series games. You know, all of those different sports at their highest level of being performed at. And I can go on and on about why the Masters is a unique sporting event at the highest level. There's a lot of reasons for it. Most of it has to do with when you're there. Not only the way they demand that the networks cover it, but also the high level of competition. And that tournament yesterday did have some unique moments in it that we've seen similar things to it before, but you know, it was unique because the first couple of rounds of the tournament over the weekend, it was a current day Mount Rushmore with about 10 or 12 names instead of just four of guys who were on the leaderboard with a chance to win it. Big names, major winners, guys who were tied for the lead, within one of the lead. It was a huge, huge top-heavy leaderboard that was really compelling because any one of those guys and all of them had experience of winning a tournament of this magnitude. So it was really a horse race at the end of the tournament. And then to see Tiger get into the final group late in the day on Saturday was a big teaser, you know.
Sure.
So it was a great Masters. I loved watching it. It leads us into what we want to talk about today for the Twitter question that goes on throughout the day is it was really moving, and what we've seen in that sport and with Tiger in his personal life and his professional life, it's pretty compelling to see him win the Masters again as his first major back after over a 10-year drought of championship.
And can I say this? Your colleagues at CBS Sports did a fantastic job, and watching it as I did, you know, after the fact, I knew the outcome. I knew how it was settled. And I'm watching it thinking, why are they showing these guys? At first, more Tiger. And then I thought, wait a minute. In real time, they had, at some points, they had 7 or 8 or 9 guys yesterday in real time, late in the afternoon or late in the round, who had a chance to win. Yeah. And to their credit, CBS did a great job of keeping you all abreast of what everybody was doing, even some lesser lights who were having great rounds, not in the first group or in the second group. And they did a fantastic job. I always felt like I knew what the leaderboard was. I mean, I can't tell you. Every 30 seconds they showed a leaderboard, but they had to, so you could keep track of everybody. I was really impressed with the way CBS told the story yesterday in real time as I watched it on replay last night. The pictures are always great. The insight is always great. There was a little bit of humor. But I really thought it was masterful sports television yesterday for the Masters. I really do.
I agree with you. CBS does a wonderful job. Now, they've also obviously had decades of practice of doing it. They work within the lines, the confines of the Masters tournament that are laid out by the committee.
Which is not easy.
It is not easy, and it's different. And that's the hard part for me and the announcers, guys like Nick Faldo and our guy Andrew Catalan is also on that broadcast, telecast. It's all hands on deck, really, on the play-by-play side of it. They've got all the guys over there. And there's also 4 or 5 platforms that they're broadcasting off. And some of the platforms have some pretty stark boundaries that they can work within. And to do a job like they do and keep particularly the main broadcast on CBS television, it's Channel 4 here in town, it's hard to keep everybody included. You got a guy like Xander Schauffele, who most of us aren't familiar with at all.
That's right.
He's a young early 20-something kid.
California, right?
Yeah, and he's in the mix at the end of the Masters, and we're seeing shots from him because he got a chance. And then also everybody wants to see, well, what's Tiger going to do now? Where's Phil Mickelson? Where's Brooks Koepka? And they've got all these names that they're juggling, and they've had enough experience to pull it off pretty seamlessly.
Yeah.
They mixed in a couple of interviews in the Butler cabin during the time, you know, where they had, okay, Brooks, what'd you think of your round? He goes, well, I did this. He had a chance, and he had a chance to birdie that last hole and couldn't get it done, missed the putt. The drama is really on the course when guys have a chance, and then even with a couple of holes to play, it evaporates. You could feel the air go out of Francesco Molinari when he put the ball in the water at 12. That's six holes to play. Mm-hmm. He wasn't out of it. I mean, he just dropped back to the lead or one behind the lead, so he was still in it. But, man, oh, man, you could just feel him go away. That's the interesting thing about golf that I think it offers a viewer in competition that no other sport does, even though the game, you know, there's always that point, well, the game's over. There's 3 minutes to go, and they're down by four goals in hockey, or they're down by four touchdowns in the NFL. But in golf, it seems like it's a slow-moving death, and that's I think that's the drama of it that CBS, I think, put on. They did a really nice broadcast yesterday.
The other great thing about Masters on TV, the limited commercial breaks, the short commercial breaks, not too many, you know what I mean? It's eminently watchable. When you know you watch stuff, I mean, the NCAA tournament – you know, you got to sit through a ton of commercial breaks, yeah. And they're longer than normal college basketball.
Same thing in the Super Bowl.
They're Super Bowl is ridiculous.
Yeah.
The Masters is the other way.
The
short
NBA.
Commercial breaks, very few of them. It was great.
NBA Finals.
Great to watch.
NHL. Yeah, it's all like that. And I could go on and on about it, and I could give you a couple of them off the top of my head about the Masters. Even though when you watch the Masters, the one thing you don't see, and maybe you don't notice as a result, is the fact that there is no signage on the course. There's no Mercedes-Benz, there's no Rolex, there's no Buick, there's no whatever, whatever, whatever. There's none of that on the grounds of the event. No signs, no advertising, nothing.
The cups and
even CBS,
yeah.
I mean, they've got mic flags on, but you rarely ever see it. You see it in the butler cabin on a microphone. That's the only place you'll ever see the CBS mic flag or the CBS emblem. You just don't see it. It is totally about golf and Augusta National. And it's really interesting when you think about where we are in this day and age. The only advertising you see is on the collar or the shirts or the hats of the participants. That's the only place you see advertising, those guys' sponsors. When you're on the grounds, of course, everybody knows you can't have a cell phone on Augusta National. They check it. You got to go through a metal detector. They take your phone away from you. You got to check it or leave it at home. If you need to call somebody at Augusta National, there's a phone there for you. You go up and you dial the number, and it's free. They got a whole bank of 25 phones. Just walk up. You can call Japan if you want to while you're at the Masters, and it's totally free of charge. So all of that stuff makes it different. They've got security people everywhere that are some in uniform, some not, that do a multitude of things. They don't allow people to yell at the players. Heckling is forbidden. You can't yell from the top of the gallery down to a player during one of those quiet moments, you know. If you do that, there's a couple of guys up there that make a little eye contact with each other, then they pinpoint you, and then they come up and politely ask you not to do that.
They throw you out?
And it escalates from there. If you're going to continue to do it, then, you know, that's going to have to be it for you. They don't do it in a confrontational way. It's just the way it is. The restrooms, concession stands are all unique and different. The pro shop is different. It's all unique, and you have to be there to experience it. But if you're a golf fan, the Masters has to be on your bucket list, or you're not a golf fan. For a sports fan, it should still be on your bucket list because it's that unique of an event. And plus, you got to go to all these other events like the Kentucky Derby, like the Indy 500, like the NBA Finals, like the NHL Stanley Cup. Like the World Series, I've been to all of that stuff. Like the Boston Marathon, I've been to all of that stuff. Well, only by going to all of that stuff will you go to the Masters and notice how unique it is.
Yep.
I just went on like on a ramble. Sorry.
That's okay. You've been there. Yeah. Yesterday's Masters obviously was a seminal event in this year's sports calendar. Certainly at the end of the year, people will be talking about it. For years, people will be talking about it. People are talking about it today. We want to talk with you about it a little bit. And yes, we're trying to relate it a little bit to the NFL, which is really our bailiwick. So, here's the question. It's not a poll on Twitter. The question we can discuss on the phone lines, discuss on Twitter, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And our Twitter site is OneBillsLive. If we like your tweet and we have time, we'll read it on the air. Here it is. Fresh off Tiger Woods' comeback to win his fifth Masters tournament, first since 2005, we ask you this question. What is the best redemption story in the NFL? History. What's the best, or current, you can go current, what's the best redemption story in the NFL? Give us a call, let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. If you're a frequent listener to this show, You know we agonize sometimes over the Twitter poll question. We did today. We had a long, not heated, but just a passionate discussion about this question and how to frame this question and what we're really asking.
That's
right?
A good way to put it, passionate. We rarely get heated, particularly with each other. But but we do have long conversations about the language, the wording, and this was no exception. This was a long last minute decision.
Here's why. We're thinking about what happened yesterday with Tiger, trying to relate it to NFL stories, and I guess there was a difference of opinion a little bit on what exactly was that yesterday. Was it a comeback? Was it a comeback from injury? Yes. Yes, it was. Tiger had serious back issues that prevented him from walking correctly, let alone playing golf again. I mean, it was an injury comeback, and that was significant. That was big yesterday. No question about that. Was it redemption from misbehavior? Absolutely it was. I mean, not too long ago, Tiger was generally regarded as nobody's favorite, right? I mean,
his personal life was a
train
wreck.
He blew up his family, right?
Yeah.
With his behavior.
And
he's
paid the price for that over the last 10 years. And it's been rough.
It's a redemption from that. It's a redemption from all the other associated things that came out of that. You know, well, Tiger did this and Tiger did that. And I saw Tiger here and I was with Tiger here. All of that. I mean, the guy, it was a spectacular and ugly fall from grace for Tiger Woods in the last 10 or 12 years. And he has redeemed himself to some extent with that victory yesterday. So our struggle to figure out what exactly that was yesterday led to today's, the fact that it's not a poll because we don't know who to equate it to in the NFL, but it led to our question today, what's the best player redemption story in the NFL, historically or current, if you got somebody? So let us know what you think. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It is redemption. It is a comeback. It's an injury comeback. It's redemption. It's winning back fans who obviously went away in droves 10, 12 years ago, Steve. And, of course, we have no idea how long this redemption will last. Does he win? And now he needs, what, four majors to break Jack Nicklaus' record. Does he get close to that, or is that it? Is this a one-time blip on the screen, or is this the new Tiger? We don't have that answer. You may. And related to the NFL, what's the best player redemption story in the NFL? Can I just throw out a couple of names
Absolutely.
That we discussed?
Yeah, go ahead.
And this is where it got a little heated. You know, Michael Vick. Michael Vick was public enemy number one back in...
For good reason.
Yeah, the dogfighting thing. And he redeemed himself on the football field. He was even a better passer when he returned. His redemption came on the playing field. First season back in the league was 2009. A three-time Pro Bowl quarterback for Atlanta went to jail for the dogfighting conviction, and he came back. Michael Vick, I think, is a serious NFL redemption story. I think Ray Lewis, and this is where it got a little heated. Look, Ray Lewis was in deep, dark trouble back in 2000, the Super Bowl 34 in Atlanta. He was indicted on murder charges, later accepted a deal that forced him instead to plead guilty to obstruction of justice, sentenced to 12 months probation, fined $250,000 by the NFL right after that fact. He came back. He played. He played well after that misstep, that bad misstep. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
10 years later, won a Super Bowl.
Won a Super Bowl. It wasn't even 10, right? It was just a year or two.
No, it was a while.
Well, Michael Vick is a serious redemption story, I believe. Redemption for really serious criminal issues. You made a strong case for Peyton Manning as a great redemption/comeback story.
A guy who had won a Super Bowl with a team and still had some football to play, but was injured, out of football for an entire year, went as a free agent to Denver and set records as a passer. Came back and then lost a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl with Denver after being having it thought that, you know, and the Super Bowl he won with Denver, he couldn't throw the football 25 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a shell of his former self, and yet got it done. And that year he had, I believe it was 2012, the year they lost the Super Bowl to the Seattle Seahawks, Peyton Manning had, and the Broncos had probably the best offensive year, arguably in one of them in history. And that was after he had multiple neck surgeries and the team that drafted him and made him and he made famous and put on the map and had a new stadium built because of his success, they kicked him to the curb. They didn't re-sign him, didn't show any loyalty, put him out there, and he went to Denver and had a chance to go to 3 Super Bowls out of the 4 years he was there and did go to 2. So, yeah, that's a great story of redemption that Peyton Manning was the author of.
There are others, and we want to hear from you, your nominations. The best redemption story in the NFL, in NFL history, or the current NFL. On the tweet sheet from Brian, he says, currently it has to be Peyton Manning. He had similar surgery to Tiger, was out for over a year, then came back to the Broncos, set the touchdown record his first year back, went to 2 Super Bowls, winning 1. That's exactly what Steve just said.
Yeah.
But Jason Harris, it's not Jay Harris, is it?
I don't think so.
Jason Harris.
No relation.
Jason Harris tweets it. Listen, what Tiger accomplished is far more impressive than Peyton Manning. Golf is an individual sport. You can't rely on anyone else to pick you up. Is that relevant?
A little bit. But you know, it's hard. That's why it's hard to jump sports, because they are. It's hard to compare the accomplishments of individuals over team exploits. And then, of course, from Bill's fan extreme, Mike Vick, without question, he came over. He went from cover of Madden 04 to being one of the most vilified athletes on the planet, and came back from all that a better person, I think. I can't think of a better redemption story in the NFL than that, in my opinion. In the NFL, yeah, you're right. He's in the conversation. Also from Doug, Brett Favre. You remember Brett Favre, right, Murph?
I do.
Going to the Vikings, winning a division against his old team, and taking the Vikings to the NFC Championship. And he was, you know, that's a pretty good story. Doing it as a 40-plus quarterback in the NFL after being retired and coming back. Also, Jim Plunkett from Ray Prelowicz. Jim Plunkett from going from the top draft pick to a bust to leading the Raiders to 2 Super Bowl titles. So there's a short list of people who are in the conversation. We've got also people chiming in saying, hey, it was Frank Reich. He's passed over as a head coach a number of times. He's not the first choice by Indianapolis. I think that has yet to be redeemed. Certainly he's the head coach of Indianapolis. Certainly they're very happy to have him. He was their second choice because of the acceptance, then refusal of Josh McDaniels from New England. And then Frank Reich takes over that job in Indianapolis, last-minute replacement. He and Andrew Luck now look to be on the road to success. And I think Indianapolis is really happy they've got him. And it looks – and he's obviously – and you're talking to me. You know, I'm the one saying this because he's a friend of mine. Yeah, they've got the right guy. And for me, yeah, I hope he does see that story of redemption. That'll be a great story of redemption when he was the second guy they picked, or just you know, as a fallback position, and then to take that team hopefully to some great success. That'll be a great story.
You know,
but that's unfinished, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's early in our show in this discussion, and we'll have a lot more of it to come over the next 2.5 hours. But I don't know if we're going to get to the redemption story that is quite the same as what happened yesterday with Tiger Woods. One, because of the magnitude of who Tiger Woods was back at the time at his fall from grace. He transcended golf, no question about that. He transcended sports. He was arguably one of the most notable people in the world at the time, right, when he crashed and burned.
Yeah.
And you'd be hard-pressed. There are very few NFL players, very few other professional athletes who had that sort of statue at any time. So that'll be a problem. And his fall was spectacular, Steve. I read the Tiger Woods biography. I can't remember who wrote it last summer. But it was amazing what a force he was, both business-wise and endorsement-wise, before he got into trouble, and how steep his fall was. And to be honest, and this is illustrated in the book, he wasn't that good a guy. I mean, he didn't treat people that well all
right.
the time. I think he's redeemed himself personally. But, you know, a lot of golfers, obviously jealousy would have been a factor, but a lot of golfers didn't like the way Tiger Woods played, didn't like the way he handled himself, didn't like the way he did it, went about his business. And that was like an open secret. I think he's better now. According to the book, I got to find the exact – I think the book is Tiger. But I read it last summer. And according to that book, he is much more he's come a long way in terms of rebuilding his status among his fellow players. It was a great scene post-match, and I didn't stay up late beyond 1:30 to watch it. But on his walk up to Butler Cabin, when all those other green jacket holders and other players were standing there waiting to congratulate him and shake his hand, I thought to myself, I wonder if these guys would have been there 10, 12 years ago if Tiger wins it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I mean?
I agree. I think that's a good point. We'll never know the answer to it, but certainly they were there, and they seemed genuine in their appreciation of what he'd done.
All right, we got a break here. We'll talk more about this. What's the best redemption story that you know of that you can cite in the NFL? Anything compared to what happened with Tiger yesterday? Let us know. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We're just getting started. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, standing by to join us to talk about the Bills. Maybe he'll have a thought on this as well. Come on back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. I'm John Murphy, Steve Tasker, and joined by Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. The draft approaches a week and a half away. The offseason conditioning program began today. Happy to have you here, Chris. I think we'll see a lot of you the next couple weeks if you're up to it. Are you up to it?
Sure.
We love having you on the show.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we need your insight, too, because we don't get to have the chance to go out there and stand around and watch these guys in their little, in their gym shoes.
What are we missing? No, we
You're not missing much.
Right. But you do it, though. I know you
what
do.
We, yeah. We saw a medicine ball today. We saw
little med ball slams.
Hurdles. And you see, here's the thing, too. In the next
ladders.
Couple of days, they start doing that. Then they start competing, right? They're going to have captains like Cole Beasley. Like Lorenzo Alexander said, he's one of the captains, and Cole Beasley is his partner captain.
Bills.
And I don't know who the other two captains are going to be or if there's four captains or whatever. I want to know, how that goes.
Don't they draft those guys for those teams? I think they do.
No, I think
can't remember if they do.
I think they split it up like
– I think they try to split it by body type and
big
stuff.
Big guys against little guys or whatever.
They try to
second string O-line against first team.
They try to blend. Yeah, they try to blend.
First team DBs with the second team O-line versus the second team D-line and the first team running backs, that kind of thing.
They try to blend body types because they have stuff like tug of war, and if you got all the linemen over here, it's going to be over pretty quick, just from a weight-pulling perspective.
Right, so they even them up, but still, by the same token, it turns competitive pretty quick, and that's where they start building the team.
No, it does. It gets competitive, and, they got a point system. And, I got a leaderboard. And
it's
once you got a leaderboard up on a screen, guys get pretty competitive in the locker room.
They have trophies. I've seen the trophies.
Yeah.
Oh, they – listen.
Yeah, Tywon Jones.
As soon
won
as you put a scoreboard on it and start putting names up on the wall, the fangs come out. It's great.
Well, we will talk a little bit more about the offseason conditioning, but Chris wants to weigh in on our Twitter question today. And
yeah.
It deals with Tiger Woods' victory yesterday, whatever that was, comeback, redemption story. What's the closest parallel you can find in the National Football League in NFL history to what Tiger Woods did yesterday? I think it's a redemption story yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess I would say that,
it's more
yes.
than an injury comeback.
It's more than – yes, it is.
Right?
Yeah. Here it is, yeah.
And, I mean – everybody can debate how he's kind of cleaned up his act off the field, but, because nobody knows because he's kept that pretty personal and understandably so. But I think the guy could barely – he couldn't even play golf, right? I mean, his back was so bad he couldn't even play.
Yeah, he couldn't move around. He couldn't get out of his chair, I mean, it was bad.
So our Twitter question today, and we're taking comments on this on the phones and on Twitter – fresh off Tiger Woods' comeback to win the Masters yesterday, what's the best redemption story in the NFL? You got one.
Yeah, mine is Adrian Peterson.
Ooh, that's a good one.
2012, tears his ACL. Less than 7 months later, he's back on the field and then goes out and wins NFL MVP and offensive MVP, rushes for 2,109 yards, 7 yards short of Eric Dickerson's all-time single-season rushing mark. That's pretty damn good.
That's a good one.
It's pretty good.
That's redemption with a capital R.
That's a really good one.
Yeah. And he beat out Peyton Manning, who was coming back that same year from the neck surgery and had a fantastic offensive season.
Oh,
Peterson
a record-setting.
Peterson beats him out for Offensive Player of the Year and MVP.
Peyton Manning's got to be.
With a knee injury.
Peyton Manning's got to be at that banquet going, oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? The year I put together and this guy does that?
7 yards shy of Eric Dickerson's single season all-time rushing record.
7 months after. The season starts 7 months after he.
Yeah.
After he's. Catastrophic knee injury at the age.
I mean, the guy's
at the age of like 92, right?
The guy's a freak, but right. I mean, I think everybody
like,
knew that.
He was like 30.
No, he wasn't that old. He was in the 2007 draft, so it was only his fifth or sixth year in the league. But are you talking about Peyton Manning?
No, I'm talking about Adrian Peterson.
Peterson was 2007 draft. I'm almost positive.
Okay, so he was still in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Before okay,
he was just hitting his prime.
Yeah.
Which certainly helped his cause for sure. But 7 months after an ACL and you're playing running back, I mean, hello.
That's technology for you, and
that's genes.
Yeah, and that's
genes.
A lot of things. And You're right. It's amazing.
Redemption with a capital R.
Rushing for that is.
Are you thinking at all? And this is not pleasant, but about his kind of a minimal suspension for the way he disciplined his son, right?
He used a wooden spoon or switch or something.
Yeah, he used a switch. Is that part of your calculation on redemption?
Because I don't think that was an issue yet. I don't think that had come up in 2013. I want to say that was just a few years ago. Was
2014.
Yeah, the following year.
So now he's on a roller coaster.
I'm an MVP, look out.
Now he's back to the bottom.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah.
Well, Steve, you saw one on Twitter that is interesting and Bills related.
Absolutely. You know, you think about a guy that used to play for the Buffalo Bills. There's a couple. One just recently is Richie Incognito. You think I got a guy who has his demons and was out of football for being, you know, having anger issues and having the bullying issues that he did in the Miami Dolphins out of the league, and people were you talk about a guy that took some heat
for about two or three weeks.
Yeah, he was public enemy number one
villain in America.
He was everything that the NFL didn't want itself to be. You know, they've got all these big, strong, athletic guys here, and to have them portrayed in this light was really bad for the National Football League. Richie looked horrible in it. With the incident that happened with the bullying of Jonathan Martin, one of his teammates, he was out of football for an entire year, comes back. The Buffalo Bills give him like this lifeline, which is a one-year deal, right? I mean, it was just a, you know, okay, we'll give you a shot kind of thing. And he comes in and goes to the Pro Bowl and stayed here for a couple of years and was a beloved member of the team. I mean, LeSean McCoy loved the guy. It was one of those guys that got another chance and made the most of it. Now he's out of the league now because he retired because of his body was failing. And he's had his issues since then. But to see a guy come back and put together a few good years after the stretch that we all saw and went through that public drop that happened, wow, that's pretty.
You can throw Willis McGahee in there too.
I mean, that was an injury comeback.
Yeah, I mean the knee just got completely. Oh. Yeah. I don't think anybody's seen a knee blown up like that in a long time. I mean, every ligament in his knee was destroyed. And to come back he didn't play his rookie year, as we all know, because that was here. But then in 04, to go for 1,100 yards and, what was it, 12, 14 touchdowns?
He had a 10-year career plus in the NFL.
Right.
After having a knee injury like
that guy would have been a top three pick in the draft if he didn't blow his knee up.
And listen, this is the worst possible case scenario, and this is always one of those they bring up when you see these kids saying, like Nick Bosa this year didn't play his senior year.
Right.
Because his junior year, because, you know, he didn't want to get hurt. Willis McGahee in the national championship game, January 1st or 2nd, whenever they were playing, gets his knee injured in one of those plays where they don't even want to show the replay.
Yeah.
It was horrific. And you just knew that he was never going to be the same. And it had a chance to cost him all this money and this career. We were never going to get to see him play the way, you know, it looked like he was going to be able to play. And to see him come back and put together a very good professional career after that is a good one. Willis McGahee, he's a great one.
We'll talk more about this redemption story thing, Chris, but there are a couple other issues we want to go through with you, including we talked about the return of the players, offseason conditioning, and the focal point is going to be the brand-new Player Development Center. They cut the ribbon on Friday. Mm-hmm. Players are in there today. What role do you think that room, that weight room, that Player Performance Center, what role will that play over the next 6-8 weeks, a couple of months here?
It certainly has them motivated to get in there.
Have you noticed guys are
in there taking pictures. I mean, they're going into the weight room with their phones to be like, holy cow, look at this place.
Yeah.
I mean, it is – I wrote this on BuffaloBills.com where we have a long write-up and some comment from Kim Pegula on the facility that, you know, her and Terry pretty much paid for out of their own pocket. I mean, and I think people forget there's been a lot of personal investment by the Pegulas around here since they became owners, whether you're talking about – redesigning and expanding the team locker room, the grass field expansion, the purchase of land out here just on the outside of the field house. I mean, they tripled the size of the grass field, that they have out there for practice. The training room got completely redesigned a few years ago, you know, and now this, and as I said in the write-up, this is the crown jewel of all of those improvements, in my estimation. That place is a palace in there. And as a player, just talking to some of them, they can't help but feel that their performance on the field means something to this organization. They want them to be the best they can be. But I think Kim took it a step further when I talked to her last week after the ribbon cutting ceremony. She said, we want these players to be the best they can be, have the best life they can have, even after their career is done. We want that for all the players that walk through these doors, whether we have them for a week, a month, a year, or their entire career. We want them to leave here better than they came in, and this performance center is going to do that, not just from a weightlifting and old-school training perspective, but, I mean, we're talking red light therapy. I mean, do you even know what that is? It looks like a tanning bed.
What is it?
And the red light therapy kind of reverses the effects of aging. It's got documented proof to do that.
How do I get one of those?
I'm telling you right now, I want to get in there because it also grows hair. But that's a whole other thing. As long as I don't want hair on my back, but I mean, hair on my head is what I'm looking for. Maybe I could just stick my
too
head
much
in.
Information.
There. Anyway, but then they have the cryotherapy chamber. They have the cryotherapy chamber. They have a new therapy pool that has a treadmill that runs on the bottom of it.
Right.
Where, you know, a player coming off an ACL injury, they're not allowed to run under their own body weight. Well, you put them in the pool, and the buoyancy allows them to get back into that running motion that much sooner.
Yeah, a 300-pound guy can run like a 110-pound guy.
Yeah, in there, which they could be cleared to do on their knee after 4 months, but not, you know, in a regular setting.
And it's
about
range of motion, muscle development, so when they get back out, they have fewer setbacks.
Right, and they have acupuncture room. They've got a
– it's unbelievable.
They've got a massage room. I mean, these guys used to have to leave the facility to go and get a massage in the middle of the week.
And pay for it themselves.
Right. Or go to an acupuncturist.
Schedule it themselves.
Or go to a yoga session outside where, you know, they're out in the public taking a yoga class like anybody else. That's all here now. And they don't have to do everything, but the fact that they have options where they can kind of custom make their own workouts to what they, I mean, like Lorenzo Alexander is one of the most routine-oriented guys you're going to find here among the players. All the way down to his cup of coffee at 8 o'clock in the morning on a game day that he takes on the bus with him to the stadium. He is super regimented, but there's enough here where he doesn't have to go off-site anymore and do the Pilates like he usually does. He can do that here. And then what takes it to the next level is the sports science area. There is so much testing that they can do on each of these players where they can get it down to the individual guy and say, look, this is the kind of work you need to incorporate into your regimen for injury prevention and to maximize your body type in this sport. And so to have it so cut and dry for every player to see on paper, this is the best workout regimen for me, not just defensive backs because I play corner, for me, based on my height, weight, body type, body mass index, body fat percentage, right. All of that, it does it all. For each guy.
It's the technology behind it that makes it a difference. And here's the crux to the entire problem and why they're so far – they're so much further down the road here, I think, than many, if not all, the other teams in the league. You've got their philosophy and their culture. And we have Lorenzo in here all the time. And Lorenzo, he's the easy example at the top of your head because he has bought into – he transformed his body to stay in the league.
Right.
He knows what it means to see the connection between what he eats, what he drinks, how he exercises, to the success he has on the field. A lot of young guys that come in the league, they've always been the fastest, always been the strongest, always been the best athlete, always, you know, all the way through Division I football at the highest level they can coming into this. They have never had to eat right, lift right, run right, and get all this other stuff done. Because,
nor have they experienced the wear and tear that the NFL is.
But plus, they've never seen anybody else who had. Now, and it used to be you'd have guys like Lorenzo around, and this worked this way up until this year too. Lorenzo would grab a guy and say, hey, you need to you're having trouble here. You need to get a massage on a Thursday to get ready for the weekend or to have you ready in the right way on Sunday, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of it going in. And to see the connection, it starts at the top. The coaching staff, the strength conditioning staff, the medical staff, the training staff.
Sports science staff.
The sports science staff have to get Kim and Terry to see the connection between that and wins on the field and get that connection. It's just like the players. Yeah. You have to teach these young players to see the connection between what happens in this building and making them better on the field. And once you do that and you can see the difference, and it starts at the top, and you said it, this ownership's on board. If you can see it, let's go. They spare no expense, and that's the cool part about it. When they're on board, everybody's on board, and that's pretty awesome.
Can I ask one more question? We're running out of time here, Chris. A different topic. You wrote about it, though, and it's a topic that Greg Cosell mentioned on our show a couple of Fridays ago. We're talking about offensive linemen in the draft. We asked the question as if, well, are they still in the market for O-linemen with everything they've done in free agency? Greg kind of convinced me that, yeah, they probably should be based on who they have and what they have still available. Give me your take on that. I mean, they still could use a premium first round, top 10 offensive tackle prospect on this roster, couldn't they?
Yeah, tackle. You know, if it's not in the first round, I think the value swings to the interior, though. After right. that, you know, rounds 2 through 5 are really good at the guard position. And so I don't think it necessarily has to be a tackle. But the fact is that, you know, yes, Adrian Waddle's here, but he's here on a one-year contract. What happens after this year? Deion Dawkins is in year 3 of a 4-year deal, and Ty Nsekhe only signed a 2-year contract. You don't have people locked up long-term at those positions. If you brought a rookie in of high regard and repute, then, you know, you've got somebody locked up for at least 4 years, you know, that can grow with this program as it moves forward. So I don't think you can rule out an offensive tackle early. But if it doesn't happen in the first round, I don't think fans should have their – you know, underwear and a knot over it, because there is, I'm telling you right now, at almost every position in this draft, with a few exceptions, cornerback, running back, maybe a couple others, the meat and potatoes of this draft, round 2 through 5, is really good at a lot of positions. Guard, tight end, wide receiver, offensive tackle, defensive line. I mean, there's going to be a lot of good picks on day 2 and early day 3. Players that are going to play 8-10 years in this league and have a good career that are going to help teams. And that's really the strength of this draft, the middle rounds at a lot of positions. I mean, it's limited at the top in some area. Like wide receiver, I don't really think there's a lot of top-end wide receiver talent. You may only get 1 or 2 guys in the first round.
Right.
Offensive tackles, maybe there's 4 in the first round. Maybe. I mean, unless there's an early run and maybe there's 5, but I think – you're looking at 3 or 4 OTs in the first round. And then after that, it gets interesting. But that's probably what you're looking at.
We got more draft talk for you. Can we do it next week before the draft? We got time next week, right? Are you going to be totally booked? You won't be able to.
Well, I'm on vacation early next
what?
Week. Yeah.
Who takes vacation on draft week?
Me, because that's when my kids are out of school.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Easter.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, we'll get you in here. Thanks, yeah. Chris.
Thanks,
you got
Tony.
It.
Chris
Good
Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Steve and I coming back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. We're coming to you from our One Buffalo studio on a snowy day. But I gotta, you're right. It's no point talking about the weather. It's a little.
don't lose heart, Merv.
It's April 15th.
We're almost there.
Where?
It should be raining on April 15th, if you know what I mean.
Hey, we've got a lot going on here today. We got first day back for the off-season conditioning program. We're going to hear from some of the players, Tremaine Edmonds, Josh Allen, a couple of others. That's coming up in the next hour of the show. Some draft talk, a draft preview with Dan Shanka, editor and publisher of Our Lad's Guide to the 2019 NFL Draft. Our topic today turns out getting pretty good response. We weren't sure about it. We agonized over it.
Yeah.
We were cutting veins in there and bleeding. We were agonized over it. This was a hard topic to come up with.
Because we couldn't get it the way
yeah.
I wanted it.
And I couldn't get it the way I wanted
I was fighting it tooth and nail. But
what's the best redemption story? Yeah. We got Tiger Woods yesterday. Redemption, right? It's mostly a redemption story, right?
Right.
Injury comeback, a lot going on in his personal life. He redeemed himself with his victory in the Masters yesterday. What's the best redemption story in the NFL? We got a lot of good response, some of it on the tweet sheet.
All right, he goes, here's from Brian Moss. I'd vote Kurt Warner. From arena ball and bagging groceries to playing in Super Bowls, winning 3-time MVP, then to the Hall of Fame. Yeah, I get Kurt Warner, but here I don't think his as much of a redemption story as it is just a slow start to the career. He was in the NFL for a minute in 94 with the Green Bay Packers, didn't make it, went around, banged around in the Arena League and the NFL Europe, came back and got a job with the Saints or with the Rams, and then due to injury, got his chance to play and of course, knocked it out of the park and put himself in the Hall of Fame as a result. I think it was a slow start to his career rather than redemption.
I agree. I think this next one
Listen, he's a great dude, and that's a great story, no question about it. But I think as far as redemption, I just having a slow start to your career and getting cut by a team, that's happened to most players.
Yeah. This next one is really good, and I never would have thought of it. It's from on the tweet sheet from Mr. MFCK58. Although he never returned to a roster, he tweets, Ryan Leaf has turned his life around and spreads his message to later generations of NFL players. That's a really good point. You talked to Ryan Leaf at the Super Bowl a couple years ago, right?
He does. He is a completely different guy. I spoke to him the first time he was playing in an NFL game. It was opening weekend of 1998 against the Buffalo Bills in San Diego. There were four quarterbacks on the whole field, two for Buffalo, two for San Diego. All four guys got on the field. Ryan Leaf, it was his first start and all that for the San Diego Chargers. Both guys got nicked up. And Ryan Leaf was, you could tell, he had a lot of issues he was dealing with. He was not a great leader at that time. He was an enabled finger pointer, never took responsibility. It was never his fault kind of guy. And he just had never been put in a position of responsibility where he had to own what he did. And it showed very much in his production meeting with us and on the field. And of course, he flamed out very quickly with San Diego and never got back into the league as a result. But now, when we spoke to him this last year, which is, 20 years later, he is a completely different guy. He hasn't got it all together. But now he admits it, and he also owns what he's done and his life and where he's been. So it is a good story. That's a good get.
Really good idea. Best redemption story in the NFL. We'll continue this discussion as the afternoon rolls along. Coming up next, we're going to hear from some of the Bills players, who are at the podium today speaking after their first day of off-season conditioning. That's coming up when we return. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.